I have always asked my mentors to be critical of me. Tell me where I'm going wrong. I have gone as far as saying, I am going into this next meeting with you. I would like to take the lead. I would like you to observe me. And then when we're done, tell me all the things I could have done better. You have to have that type of honesty and ask of your mentors, and they have to be able to reciprocate by providing you and fulfilling that ask.
This is the Indianness Podcast, stories of success from leaders and change makers of Indian origin. Why have Indians achieved success across so many different disciplines around the globe? I have no idea, but let's find out together, because every story is unique. I'm so very excited to have Kashchit Pandya with us today. He's the Chief Technology Officer and Acting Chief Information Officer of the IRS, the Internal Revenue Service of the United States of America, where he's been there for the past 10 years in various senior roles. I invited him on this show as I'm fascinated by his journey from various IT roles to leading technology efforts at one of the largest government agencies in the US, if not the world. Welcome, Kashchit. It's an absolute pleasure to have you on our podcast.
Thank you, Sanjay, for the opportunity. I'm really excited, and I look forward to our conversation.
Wonderful. Kashchit, this is the Indianness Podcast. As I said, what we try to do is chronicle journeys of change makers, the various inflection points, decisions, and the purpose is obviously chronicling it, but also serving as an inspirational lesson, messaging tool for our audience. What I would like you to do is just take us right to the beginning, because for us to understand the various influences that you've had, we really need to understand. So take us really to the beginning. Where were you born? Tell us about your parents, if there were any grandparents, and then I'll ask more questions after that.
Sounds great. Thank you again. I was born in India, Gujarat, Baroda to be specific. I am an only child. My dad worked in the financial industry. He was a banker. My mom was a homemaker, which I always felt it is and always was a very underrated and underappreciated role. No siblings. My grandmother on my dad's side would stay with us from time to time. And my mom's parents, my maternal grandparents, lived in a village nearby. I got to see them from an early age, but overall, it was great growing up in India, because even though I was an only child, we had quite a large extended family. I was the youngest of probably about 15 or so cousins. So I was never alone, regardless whether I was an only child or not.
Well, that's great to hear. Dad's profession was more interfacing with a lot of people, traveling. It was business. Just tell us a little bit more about his profession.
Yes, he was in the banking industry, and it required him to travel frequently. It also required us to move around quite a bit early on, from my recollections. So we moved around within Gujarat, ultimately coming back. And the memories I have are of those growing up in Baroda. But yes, dad was often out or busy and interacting with people. Mom was the constant figure growing up for me.
Yeah, and we call those moms, people call them homemakers. I call them family makers, because they really are the foundation who really built. And as you said, a grossly understated role. You were the only child, but you said you had a lot of cousins, so you really didn't feel the only child syndrome. There was no loneliness or anything like that associated with that.
Not at all. Like I said, I was the youngest of about 15 or so cousins. My mom had three other sisters, two brothers, and all of them had multiple kids. I remember very fondly growing up as just part of one large family. I remember our summer vacations going to my grandparents' house in Kalol, and it would be the whole troop. It would be all 15 of us getting together, the parents and everything. And every memory that I have is a memory of being surrounded by a very loving and large family. So there was no moment to be alone, and it was never something that I felt that I was an only child. As you know, Sanjay, in the Indian culture, we don't really even refer to those cousins as cousins. They were my brothers and sisters. So I had lots of older brothers and sisters.
Oh, that's fantastic. Tell us about the primary school you went to in Baroda. Now it's called Vadodara Drive. But in Baroda, which was the primary school you went to?
I went to Baroda High School in Vadodara now, and I was there until the fifth grade. I had skipped a grade along the way, and I was there until fifth grade. I was 10 when we moved here to the United States. So my recollection of the schooling in India, it again comes back to most of it from Baroda, although I attended other schools when I was younger in Ahmedabad or Anand and other cities where we moved from time to time, mostly Catholic schools until Baroda High School. So I had exposure to English. Baroda High School was an English medium high school. So again, exposure to English was there, though we often switched from English to Gujarati between our conversations or our lessons. But at least there was an introduction to the language, the English language.
And you mentioned one thing, Kashyap, which is that there was a little bit of movement in different cities, Ahmedabad, Anand, and other places. Did you feel any issues in terms of starting in new schools? I mean, I know the recollection is not that great, but making new friends, etc. Was that easy for you or was that difficult?
No, it was easy. Overall, it was easy. Anytime we moved and any new location we moved to and the schools I switched, my dad had, because of his role in the banking industry and where he worked, typically we had either, you know, close friends of his or close friends of the family who had children that were similarly aged and likely and most likely ended up attending the same types of schools. I had the opportunity of getting to know some of them in advance of going to those schools. So walking in, I was never the only new kid who didn't know anybody and had to figure out who my friends were. I knew somebody along the way. And in Baroda High School, again, living there, we had a family there as well. And kids from our family were attending Baroda High School. So there was never any sense of, here we go again. I have to figure out who my friends will be and how can I make them and introduce myself, et cetera.
Okay, so it was an easy transition. On the grandparents side, were the paternal grandparents living with you guys?
My grandfather on my dad's side had passed away a couple of years before I was born. My grandmother was there. She lived with us from time to time. She was there sometimes. Other times she would be here in the United States. My dad's side of the family was all here in the United States. So she would come to the United States, and then other times she would come and live with us in India. I have, again, just great recollections of my interactions and engagements with her, similar to I have with my maternal side grandparents.
And were you reasonably close to them?
I was. I got closer to my paternal grandmother once we moved to the United States. We lived with my aunt. When we moved to the United States, only my mom and I came. My dad had been here before to start to really establish something because we had planned to move. And my dad came early to figure out what it would look like, what that move would look like, what it would entail. My mom and I then came. We lived with my aunt. Again, large family, my aunt and my uncle and her kid and my other aunt and uncle and their kid. So we were always a large family. My paternal grandmother lived with us at that time. And I recall and remember spending a large amount of time with her, which I just genuinely loved. In fact, we shared a room initially. I got to hear all of her wonderful stories. She was religious and she would tell me all the various tales from our books about Krishna and Shiva and Hanuman. So that was our daily ritual. I would sit with her while she prayed and she would tell me stories. It was great having her around. My mom, though in India, she was a family maker. When we moved to the United States, as is often the case with that generation and immigrants, she had to work. So she was working two jobs a day. Morning, she worked at a factory. In the evening, she worked at a restaurant doing dishes. And she would be home probably around midnight. So I didn't really see her much on weekdays. And I spent most of my time with my grandmother.
Now, I'm just stepping back, Kashyap. You were 10. A decision was made at that time by your parents that lots of our families already in the U.S. let us also move there, even though dad was in the bank, had a banking career. So you decided to come. Your mom and you came, your dad didn't. Which place did you come to it? Was it in New Jersey?
No, we have a large family here. My aunts and uncles are here in Laurel, Maryland. So when we first moved here, we moved to Laurel, Maryland to live with my aunt and uncle. My dad was back in India trying to close up shop for a couple of years. So it was just my mom and I here.
So tell us a little bit about the initial transition. How was it when you first came? New place, maybe a new school. Yes, the advantage you had was you had that extended family already, cousins, uncles, aunts. But still, what was that experience in your mind?
It took adjusting. I had my mom with me at all times in India, whereas now I didn't see my mom except on weekends. Of course, a new country, new culture. There was a bit of a language barrier, even though I went to a quote-unquote English medium school. We often spoke in Gujarati as well. And adjusting to the accents, the different approach, the different style of the language here took a lot of acclimating to. I learned a lot by watching a lot of TV, whether it was Sesame Street or Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood or cartoon, to pick up on just culture as a whole. Before coming here, I had seen these wonderful short videos that my grandmother or my aunt who were here would come back and show us. It was playing in snow and going around and asking for candy on Halloween. So I had this perception of America being this country of where there's always constant snow and there's so much, I would say, a lot of festivities that were so different than growing up in India and the Hindu festivals and such. Obviously, Halloween isn't an everyday event and it doesn't snow every single day, but that's how I had envisioned it because that's what was shown to me back in India. Adjusting was easier because, again, of family. We had probably living in my aunt's house. There were about 10 of us, a few of my younger cousins included, and they really helped me adjust to America as a whole and the culture and certainly the schooling system. School was interesting initially. Growing up in India, it was very uniform and strict. And here it was not. I was able to wear and do as I needed to, but I also had to take care of myself in the morning. So I didn't have my mom getting me ready and helping me get out the door. Here it was all up to me. And then, of course, school itself, I excelled in math. And I was terrible in English, right? So I was put in an advanced math class and then a lower English class, which was fine. It allowed me to really understand what the mechanisms are for interacting and engaging with students and teachers here.
So a big transition. Now, tell me, mom had never worked in India before, right?
Correct.
And here she had to delve into two jobs somehow. How was that transition and what was that impact on you?
That really set me up. You've talked about inflection points in other conversations. And to me, that was one of the earliest inflection points of my life. Mom had been around and a constant figure in India as I was growing up. And now my mom was not around as often. And I understood why. She had to do what she did. And what I observed in her is what I also adopted over time as I grew. And what I observed was she had never worked, but this is what was necessary. And she did it without complaining. She did it without ever raising a concern or an issue about the fact that she has to do this or how hard it is and how difficult it was for her because, again, it was a very blue-collar job that she was doing. In fact, two of them, standing for 12 to 18-hour days, possibly, and doing manual labor. And through that observation, what I realized is the importance of resiliency. To me, it reinforced the idea, although I thought about this over time and not when I was 10, but over time, I recognized and realized that the resiliency that she demonstrated. And I truly believe that resiliency is a muscle memory. And without complaint, I knew why she was working. She was working to make sure that I was going to be successful. I had what I needed. And it really drove me to therefore be successful. I couldn't afford to goof off. I couldn't afford to not do my work. I had to be successful because here I have my mom who made the greatest sacrifice that she has made in her life by moving away from her entire family, coming to a foreign country, and now taking on and working 18-hour days and doing manual labor to ensure my success in the future. And to me, that was what ultimately lit that fire within to make sure I did everything within my possible opportunities and provided opportunities to be successful. And I don't want to take away anything from my dad because he similarly had to sacrifice and move from a very well-established career to coming here and having to really reinvent himself and try and make the best of what we had. But to me, my mom's sacrifices still stand out and stand above anything else.
Absolutely. As you said, a big inflection point, especially for someone who had a family and had never worked before. Kashyap, when did dad then, he was in India, was he there for what, couple of years and then he moved back here?
He was there for 4 years. We came here in 1985. He was there until 1989. He would visit from time to time, but again, not necessarily. We weren't together, all three of us together, for those years. He came here finally in 1989 after having a stroke, closed down our house and everything else in India. So there was a period of approximately 4 years, you know, where I got to see him only from a few months at a time when he would come and visit. He came here in 1989. He had secured a job with the same bank that he was working at in India, but that bank was in New York City. So once he came, we moved to Queens. And talk about, again, an inflection point. We went from a large family living together. I had finally felt like I'm settling into a new country and understanding the culture better in a smaller town. And we go and move into Queens in New York, which is, again, I don't think I necessarily need to elaborate or explain what Queens, how Queens is so different than Laurel, Maryland was.
It's going from, pardon the expression, like a village to a big city in many ways, and very diverse. And then also, Kashyap, you went from being surrounded by cousins and aunts and uncles, and now probably you were on your own, right?
Yes. I had an aunt who lived here. My cousins were my older, or at least my cousin, one of my cousins was my age, and we were close. He lived in New York with his parents, my aunt and uncle. So there was still some family here. And as is always the case, my uncle had an extended family of his brothers and their wives. So we were still a large family. However, living was different. We were now just the three of us living together versus the large family that I grew up with, either in India or early in the United States. And now we found ourselves just being the three of us. My mom and I are both introverts by nature. My dad is was quite the extrovert, and we would do our best to try and engage each other as often and as best as we could, but the dynamics were different. There weren't as many voices in the house, and there were periods where we all just sat and watched TV or ate. So it certainly changed. And that was right as I was starting high school.
So do you think that had an impact on you, that transition, Kashyap, looking back?
Absolutely. It introduced me to the diversity that you referenced just a short while ago. Now there was a large city that we were living in that I was unfamiliar with. My mom was, as always, the first thing she did as soon as we moved here or moved to New York, was she went and found a job. She didn't waste any time. Again, she ended up working at a factory initially. So she was out there working. How and what I did as far as from a high school perspective was significantly different. I was used to walking to the schools. They were around the corner when I was growing up in Maryland, to now taking subways to school. I didn't really know anyone, whereas I had made quite a large group of friends in Maryland. So it was starting all over again 4 years after having to start all over again.
Yeah. And then were you able to make some friends in that high school? And how are the academics? Was it more rigorous than Laurel or about the same? I mean, you were doing pretty good in math in Laurel, struggling a little bit in English. But so how was it here in the high school here?
So my freshman year, I went to the high school that was the neighborhood high school, which was a short distance away from where we were living. However, New York has specialized high schools and you have to take tests to get into them. There's Bronx Science, Stuyvesant, Brooklyn Tech. So I took the test and I got into Brooklyn Tech. So starting with my sophomore year, I moved to Brooklyn Tech. That was, again, an interesting transition because that was when I finally had to start taking subways to school. Brooklyn Tech was just an amazing experience as a whole. It was heavily focused on science and engineering. And in fact, they required you to select a major for your junior and senior year. So it was very similar to a college experience where you had to take a lot of the general classes, but then you had to really pick a major. And then bulk of your time between your junior and senior year, you are focused on that major. You're spending 4, 5, 6 periods a day in doing that major. And that allowed me to really start to build up that circle of friends, because now those individuals who had picked the same major as I clearly had a similar interest. And it forces that initial bond from which the friendships grew.
And which majors did you pick at that time, Rashid?
I was a mechanical engineering major. So I did mechanical engineering for 2 years and we had some amazing projects that we did. We built a fully operating car without all the hood and the doors and all of that, but it went forward, backward, et cetera. But we built a hovercraft. So it was truly not just in concept. We had to apply those concepts to make something real happen.
So you are pretty mechanical and technical, starting to become more technically inclined. And then what about the friends? Was it a diverse group of friends that you were with there? And how was it? Tell us a little bit about that.
It was. My closest friend, who I'm still very close to this day, was Indian. But outside of that, because of the diversity of the school itself, there were no small groups that we gravitated towards of the same background, etc. It was more around the shared interests, similar interests. And because the diversity of New York City as a whole, Brooklyn Tech was no different in the types of students it had. So it allowed me to not only have my good Indian friend, but also friends of other backgrounds, whether it's ethnicity or approach and mindset. And it really started to blossom, I would say, from mid-sophomore year into my senior year. By then, we had such a large set of friends that were diverse in not just what they were, what their majors were, but what their desires and interests were. And it exposed me to more than what I liked. It really allowed me to understand what architecture was like or what art was like, because of what they were doing and how they shared and spoke about.
So you feel that it expanded your horizons? It really made you just think broader, your perspective, et cetera, Kashyap?
Absolutely. And Brooklyn Tech was a microcosm of what New York City is. It's a diverse culture, a blending of so many different backgrounds and people and their own experiences along the way. New York City is still like my favorite city. I still call it home. I don't live there, but I still call New York City my home. But Brooklyn Tech created that opportunity for all of us to be close because we were in school together and still give the opportunity to engage with from the diverse cultures that people came from. And it allowed really me to recognize the importance of diversity. That diverse, whether it's diverse thought or diverse ideas, diverse food, whatever it might be. And it truly expanded my horizon from how my early childhood years were India. So of course, the exposure was just others in India. Laurel, Maryland, being much smaller than New York City, was limited in its diversity. But once we moved to Queens and I went to high school here, it completely expanded who and how I engaged with people, which was such a blessing as I look back and how and what my career ultimately ended up being. But in reality, what all of our careers or paths end up require, you should have exposure to as broad a diverse a group as you can, because there is no one right perspective or one approach in anything. And the only way to make meaningful progress in anything we're doing is to have that type of exposure and collection of ideas from varied backgrounds.
So you're making some very important points. Obviously, another inflection point, but also your message is that sometimes it's easy to be insular, harder to be diverse. But what you're saying is diversity of thoughts, ideas is very critical, in a, especially in a world which is truly global. And I think being in Brooklyn really allowed you that opportunity.
Absolutely. Now, the world is the world. And now, ever more, even back before when I was in high school, now we are all connected. Social media or the technology transformations over the course of last 20, 30 years have unified and made it so much more easily accessible to engage with people from around the globe. And without having that either desire or exposure to engage and interact with that diverse set of group, you're not going to be able to make meaningful progress in anything you do. You're going to have to understand that different areas have different ideas and different perspectives and different approaches. And that's what our world is today. I know I experience it in my work daily, but I also experience it in my personal life. We are constantly connected to anyone and everyone around the globe. And that's something that has to be understood and exposed to from as early on as possible.
That's very helpful. Kashyap, were there any sports at all in your life growing up? Because you talked about family, you talked about academics. I didn't hear any cricket or anything at all. So I want to just tap into it, because that plays a, at least in a lot of our guests, I've heard them talk about the role of sports. I want to find out from you.
Yes. So growing up, I was deathly afraid of a ball. And being deathly afraid of a ball and trying to play a sport usually don't go hand in hand. However, as I grew and had, again, exposure, right? I, most of my inclinations were to read or watch TV or do something non-athletic in nature. But my friends were very much into playing sports. So I played basketball in high school because my friends were all playing basketball. And then basketball became how and what we used to bond us. We would play basketball for hours on end on weekend. We would get up, get together, go to the basketball court for most of the day, and then cap off the evening with a dinner or something. But those were our weekends. So basketball is what I truly enjoy. I wish I can say I was athletically gifted, but I am not. But it was a fun time doing something different than just focusing on the academics.
And this was in Brooklyn mainly?
It was in Brooklyn, but by the time I was a senior in Brooklyn Tech, one of my friends had a car. So the world was our oyster at that point. And we would go and play basketball either in Brooklyn or in Queens. And on weekends, it was in Queens because all of us lived in Queens. So most of the time on weekends we spent on the basketball court was in Queens.
And is sports in your mind a microcosm of building relationships? Some people talk about the ability to learn teamwork. Some people have mentioned that it makes them humble because there's always somebody who's better than you. Talk about what were some messages from basketball for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Majority of the people were better than me. So it wasn't, certainly the humility was already there because it had to be from the get-go. But the importance of sports to me is how it unifies and how it should be viewed and how it unifies us to a common goal. Basketball is a perfect example. On a court, you have five players and five players have five different positions. Whether you're a center or a point guard, you are responsible for some part of the court and some part of the offense and part of the defense. And if you look at those players individually, you see that they are doing something that they are responsible for doing. But no single individual on a court is going to win the game. Now, I know we can talk about superstars and such, but even your LeBron James and Michael Jordan had incredible supporting stars along with them. So basketball is a microcosm of what, how, and what's required to achieve success and a common goal. It unifies or unites you against a common goal. Common goal in basketball is to score points. And you cannot score points if you believe your job is only to do some subset of what is required. You have to play together. You have to plan. You have to strategize. Ultimately, it's only working through all four other players and yourself that you get to what you want to achieve. You want to score points and you want to score more points than the other team, of course, ideally. But win or lose, it unites you as a one unit and one group to achieve a common goal. And I think that's what has always highlighted for me what sports mean, because it carries into my professional career. I cannot, regardless of my titles and regardless of my role, I cannot achieve success single-handed. There's a large team around you and each of them brings their own strengths. We all have to unite against that common goal. And the best way to achieve it is by doing it together.
Well, that's a great message. We hear that constantly, is the teamwork and the humility and also friendships along the way that sometimes last a long period of time. So basketball obviously was a big period. Now, tell us, when you were coming out of high school, you started looking at colleges. What happened as you were getting into college? What were the choices and decisions made?
Yes. As I was coming close to graduating my senior year, my dad would often go to the library and look up careers. He would say, oh, look, aeronautics engineer or this civil engineer, or of course, there's always a doctor and something in the medical field. So it was interesting because my dad was more active in trying to identify a career for me than even I was. I almost deferred that to him in some sense. I applied to a few different state universities. I applied to some of the private institutions. We were not well off. My mom is now working as a cashier. My dad is doing insurance. So he's selling insurance. And it was a hard transition for him to go from a high position in a banking industry where he was well respected and well compensated to now taking all of that knowledge, and he had tremendous financial knowledge, but to convince somebody to buy an insurance policy from him was just not where it aligned for him. So we were struggling financially. I knew that regardless of where I might be accepted to, we were going to have to figure out how to pay for college. My dad, again, I believe this is probably fairly typical of Indian parents and certainly immigrants, only said, go to Harvard. And there was no discussion around, okay, let's consider where your interests are, what schools are great for that type of field you might be interested in. His only direction was go to Harvard. Spoiler alert, I did not go to Harvard. I wanted to, again, continue to explore and expand my world. So I knew I was going to do something that forced me really to leave home. But I also didn't want to be too far from home because I was still close to my parents and my mom above all. And I ended up selecting State University Stony Brook, which was out there in Long Island. And it was far enough that I was able to stay on campus, but close enough that I was able to come home on weekends.
That's great. So you then decided to go to Stony Brook. How was that transition? I mean, because now you were completely independent in a dorm. And so tell us a little bit about that.
I enjoyed it from day one. I really did. I loved the independence of it. My freshman year was great. I lived in a dorm with my roommate and we became friends. And I was, again, academically very focused on making sure that I succeeded and did as well as I could. I'll be honest, some of that independence and the realization of independence started to come into play my sophomore year. And
it always does.
And it from there was like, wow, maybe I won't go to that class, but I'll study really hard later on and I'll be okay. And instead, I'm going to go play pool or I'm going to go hang out with friends. So that started to seep in starting my sophomore year. And from my sophomore year to really my senior year, there were probably more classes missed than there should have been. But I was enjoying the experience of it. All led to, again, new people, new ideas, new perspectives. I was trying out different fields. I didn't really know which area and what I wanted to do. When I was a freshman, I thought, well, mechanical engineering makes a lot of sense. I did it for 2 years in public tech. So it felt like an easy transition. It was anything but easy. It was extremely difficult. And I realized that perhaps this isn't for me. So I did maybe half a semester of mechanical engineering before I stopped. I liked math, continued to take math classes. I loved physics, took physics classes, but I didn't really gravitate towards a specific field throughout my sophomore or junior. I took a lot of computer classes because I just enjoyed using computers. That's when email was starting to come in and early stages of the internet. But it wasn't until really my junior into my senior year that I had finally settled on computer science. Very late in the game from a college perspective as to understanding and realizing where I could be good at. And I still wasn't convinced that I would be. Just I had taken a lot of classes and they seemed interesting.
So you started gravitating towards computers then, Chit. So the senior year, you started moving into computers and then you graduated from Stony Brook?
Yes. I graduated from Stony Brook with a bachelor's in management information systems, computer systems, computer science, different terms, but management information systems. And Stony Brook, like all other colleges and universities, has a job fair where different companies come and try and do their recruiting. So I applied to a few different places. And again, from a resume perspective, I had worked at a computer lab in Stony Brook, had a part-time job doing some foundational technology outside of Stony Brook. But my resume was very short, probably a pamphlet rather than a resume at best. But that's what these companies know. They are not coming in looking for a seasoned executive or a veteran. They're looking for that raw talent.
And those were the early days also of the computer revolution that was—
Exactly. So I would say there's serendipity. There's just luck that comes into play here. I graduated and those were, as you said, the early days of computer science and computers as a whole. And it was just an industry that was blossoming and at a rapid rate. So I ended up receiving multiple offers from multiple companies, not because I excelled by any means, but simply because it was right timing for the field I was in and what was happening outside in the industry. So I ended up receiving a few different offers. I took the offer that I felt made the most sense. But again, just taking a chance on nothing more than myself and knowing that I was going to work hard regardless of where I went and what I did. I worked at a IT consulting company called Kraft Kennedy & Lesser at that time. Now it's Kraft & Kennedy. And it was a consulting company that provided IT consulting services for law firms. And I would probably say it's an understatement for me to say that is what set the foundation for my career. For me, I was able to learn by doing everything hands-on. I built servers. I crawled under desks to replace workstations. I built firewalls, storage, messaging. I mean, every technology that was being used in the industry, I was able to get my hands on.
So it really built that foundation and maybe another inflection point. Maybe you were even putting some PCs together with graphics boards and memory boards and all those, the old days of assembling PCs that most people probably don't even remember. But it gave you a really good understanding of TCP/IP and all that other stuff that was happening, right?
Absolutely. I was indeed putting PCs together, motherboards and processors and memory. I was even building my own network cables. I was building racks when we were moving or migrating some companies' infrastructure, setting up their computer rooms, unboxing and setting up the physical racks and then stacking the servers myself. I mean, I did all of it. And from that point on, I was there for approximately 5 years. At that point, the 5 years is what allowed me to really, again, set the foundation, but then I keep coming back to those first 5 years. While the technology or the software might change, the foundations are the foundation. Once I understand how TCP/IP works, what you use to enable that to function, is going to change, but TCP/IP doesn't change. For me, those 5 years were absolutely critical in defining my success over the course of the remainder of my career to where I am today.
As a message to our listeners, foundational experiences, and maybe sometimes just rolling up your sleeves, you probably installed some Seagate and Western Digital hard drives too, if I'm not mistaken. Those are pretty important, and I think people should really pay attention to that, right, Kashyap?
Absolutely. I will say, regardless of the field that you're in, rolling up your sleeves and understanding the foundation, understand the foundation of what it is. That is what is required to build on for future successes. It can be computer science, it can be architecture, it can be mechanical engineering. You have to move beyond the concept and the theory. You have to roll up your sleeves, and nothing comes without the hard work behind it. I remember in those early days, and even beyond those early days, and even as of today, I have never veered away from putting in the necessary effort. I would work nonstop for weeks on end, weekends included, because again, as we were doing these migrations or change, nobody wanted us to take down their environment during the day. So we would work at night, work weekends. And there was a period where I volunteered for every single assignment. And I was working, I believe my longest stretch was something like 9 straight weeks, weekends included. But at each of those instances, I was given and taking advantage of the opportunity to learn and understand what makes these things work, whether it's the program, the financials, or the actual computers. And that is what is critical. Regardless of the job you're in, you have to take the opportunities or ask for those opportunities to be involved and operate in the weeds. You have to operate and execute in the weeds before you can start moving out of them. Because if you don't understand that foundation, your ground will always remain shaky regardless of how high you go.
So very important messages. You're saying operate in the weeds, which basically you're saying go deep. Don't be on the surface, no matter what jobs you're doing. And that's a great message. Well, I think it's early on, but any part of your career, you need to really understand what you're doing. So that's a great message, Kashyap. Kashyap, so you moved on from there after 5 years. And how has that journey been? Obviously, why did you move on from that job?
In 2003, I got married to my wonderful wife, Murphy. And until then, I was living with my parents, as is, again, fairly typical. However, once we got married, we wanted to move out, of course, and start our life together. So we were two households now. My mom, cashier, my dad, insurance salesman, struggling a bit. I knew that I was going to, and I wanted to help my parents as well. So we needed to start our own life, but I also wanted to help my parents. And it was a pure financial move at that time. I needed to make more money. So I moved on from the incredible company that I worked at, Kraft Heinrich & Lesser, to another consulting company, making a little bit more money, starting to establish our life, married life together. And then over the course of next few years, I switched jobs again, whether it was a career move or is required it for financial purposes. But I stayed in the consulting world for another 5 years or so before going in-house and becoming an administrator, and then moving from an administrator to a manager to there. That's where those executive roles started coming in. But the movements from the one to the next were typically driven by my continued ambition to keep moving up the ranks and learn more and be able to manage. And honestly, financially driven just as much, because I never wanted my parents to feel like they didn't have my support. They had done so much to sacrifice for me. I wanted to make sure that I was taking care of them as well.
And then, you know, you have been a private sector person all through. I mean, you're working with these companies. What kind of led you to go into the public sector? Because that's a different mindset. And you've now been there for 10 years.
Yes. So private sector companies were great. Each and every place I worked allowed me to further grow as an individual. certainly professionally, but also personally. Again, that mix of diverse individuals and backgrounds and experiences. So each of them provided me with the opportunities along the way that has helped me achieve various successes over the course of my career. There was always an element, however, of the greater good that was missing. And it started to surface more and more the more I work in the private industry. Is, okay, I'm getting good at what I'm doing now, I'm contributing, and I'm helping the company to achieve increased revenues or increased sales, whatever it might be, maybe not directly, but the underlying technology is being provided and supported by me or my team. But at the end of the day, it was like, well, what does this really mean for me? Or what does it really achieve for us as either, I don't want to say humans, but how is it helping? And right as I was having that period in my life where I was questioning what I'm contributing towards, and if it's something greater than just a bottom line, an opportunity surfaced. IRS was looking for technologists, and I applied. Again, just sent an application. Didn't really know much about IRS other than the collective. But yeah, exactly. They take our taxes, right? But I was finishing up my MBA at the time, which helped contribute to, okay, I want to do something more than just what I've been doing. And how can I best apply my experience, my newly obtained MBA to do something greater than what I was doing? And the IRS application, coming into this country had provided me so many opportunities, so many wonderful benefits that I felt I needed to do something in return that favor. For me, it's paying my dues. Early on, as I mentioned, my mom's sacrifices were what instilled in me the hard work necessary to be successful, because her sacrifices can't go in vain. So I wanted to pay back my dues to my mom by being successful. I wanted to pay back to America by taking what I have learned to be able to give back and do something for the American people, for the country as a whole. So that's what drove or motivated me to apply. I didn't know if I would get even an interview, which ultimately I did. And when the job offer came, it was yet another inflection point. We were living in North Jersey. My wife's side of the family is all in New Jersey, but the job was going to be near Washington, D.C. So we knew we were going to either make a big move or we're going to pass it up. And sacrifices continue, but not by me. This time it was my wife, Purvi, who made that sacrifice. In order for us to take this job, she was going to have to sacrifice being close to her family because they were going to obviously stay and we were going to move. We took the chance. Initially, the position I was given had a four-year term associated with it. So it was a very risky move to move ourselves from New York, New Jersey area to Western Maryland. And the possibility that 4 years after our move, I may not have a job, but what I knew was I was going to work hard, as I have always done, and that I'm disciplined in that sense where I would never, ever let somebody outwork me. But more importantly, once more, somebody else has sacrificed something huge for me, and I was not going to let that go in vain either. I wouldn't be here if it weren't for my wife making that sacrifice. And I owe her my successes, similar to how I owe my early successes to my mom. There was never a question of, will I work hard enough to excel and be given more opportunities? There was only a question of, I hope I do succeed because I want to make sure that the people who have sacrificed along the way are able to see that their efforts were not wasted.
So in part, you're driven because you don't want to let down the people who have sacrificed a lot. Mom and your wife, Urvi, obviously have played a significant role. But there was sacrifice because, Kashyap, for people who maybe are not as aware, the government is obviously, and this was your sacrifice of giving back to this amazing country. But generally, when people look at technical compensation in the private sector versus the government, there's a significant delta out there. So you made that big sacrifice. But what you're saying is it's really important. It was important for you to do that. And I think that's a great message. Kashyap, when you look back Can you pick one or two good childhood memories that we all have? Some amazing, there are some amazing pictures that bring a smile, a stationary picture or a video that you go back. What are the one or two or three things you can just relate, whether it was in Baroda, whether it is in Laurel, whether it is in Brooklyn or Queens? Give us one or two snapshots, because that tells us a lot about you.
Yeah, absolutely. There are many, but one of them is in India. As I mentioned, growing up with that extended family, one memory that I have that I often think about is spending summers in Galo at my grandparents' house. And there would be the 15 cousins and all of the aunts and uncles and everyone else. So there were probably about 30 people in the house, and the house was not built for 30 people. So we would all sleep on the floor next to each other or on the terrace because it was always too hot. And my cousins, who I was very young, 8, 9 perhaps. So I was the youngest, and they didn't want me tagging along, but my grandfather would be like, "You're not going anywhere unless you take him. We would go and just travel around the village. We would find these mango farms, and we would go and pick mangoes straight off the trees and just enjoy. That was our afternoon. There was no cell phone. There were no tablets and TVs. It was just exploring. And my cousins, who would take me because they were forced to, would make me climb some of these trees and go and get the mangoes for them. And we would collect a large amount of mangoes, and we would sit in the farms and we would eat mangoes. And I remember that to this day because it was so much fun. Now that I think about it, perhaps even in the moment when I was there, it was fun. So that was one. The second one that growing up that I remember is my first Halloween and my first Christmas. Halloween was great. And you walk around, people give you candy. It was like the greatest thing ever. But the first Christmas, my first Christmas here in the United States was 1985. And again, all of the family was together at my aunt's house, and we slept under the Christmas tree on Christmas Eve and just awaiting Santa. Now the paradigm has shifted a bit. I was the oldest of the cousins, whereas in India, I was the youngest. So I had my younger cousins with me, and we had a large party on Christmas Eve, and then we all slept under the Christmas tree. My mom, who again was working two jobs, did what she always did. She knew what I wanted because other kids had it, or I would talk about it. So she took all of the money that she was probably making at that time, got me my first video game system. So I wake up, and right above me where I was sleeping is a present. That's the video game system. Great memory of that Christmas, first Christmas, everybody together. I got this great gift, but it was, again, always with people, right? My memories are never of me going off and doing something alone. It's always being together with family or friends and having a shared experience.
Wow. I can just visualize that. So especially, I love mangoes. So I can, people who don't know, in my view, the greatest fruit, Alfonso and all the other stuff, you sitting there pulling them from the trees. But it's the people and that pure joy of being with people and sharing, and your first video game from Santa/mom, just fantastic, fantastic memories. Kashyap, as we are growing up, we believe sometimes that successful has this meaning and then it shifts over time. Has the definition of success changed for you over time?
Somewhat. I'm still quite ambitious. I still want to achieve much more in my career. But as I think back to making a move such as from the private industry to the public sector, how success was defined was no longer that I must make the most amount of money. To me, success was defined by how much am I contributing to a mission for something larger than me and larger than what money can buy. At the end of the day, money is great and I'm comfortable and I'm able to provide for the family. But beyond that, it's just buying stuff. To me, money is not as important as it was when I was early on in my career, but it is more about the mission and how much I can do to help make a difference in the community, the country, the agency, or wherever I'm working. Am I making a difference? To me, that's not part of the success. The other part of it is ensuring that I focus on work-life balance. What I remember growing up, and we talked a little bit about this, you know, what did having my mom go off and work instill in me? My dad was, I understand, doing the things necessary, but he was not here for those 4 years. And I was going from 10 to 14, which were quite formative years. To me, it I would say, highlighted and perhaps stressed that I want to be different. I have two boys, Aaron, who's 13, and Niam, who's 9. And one of the things that I always wanted to make sure is I am around for them. I'm around for them. And I understand the sacrifices my dad had to make and he couldn't be, but I wanted to correct that as I am growing up and certainly having a family of my own. So success now is achieving, of course, within my professional and career path, but equally ensuring that I am there for the family and I'm there for the kids to help guide, coach, mentor, or move them into a successful career and life of their own. Success is now varied versus how it was initially, which was make the most money and get the best title.
Yeah. And that's called evolution and that's called growth that happens. But great to hear it's about the work-life balance and being there for your children. Kashyap, a lot of our guests talk about role of mentors in their life. Have there been any mentors? Mentors come in many different shapes and sizes, parents, grandparents, friends, professionals, etc.
100%. I have been lucky from the very first job I ever had to have a mentor. Some are formal, some are informal, but regardless of that, they have demonstrated that they're invested in me and they're invested in my growth and invested in my successes. And the mentors that I have had in the professional side of the world have always taken the ones that I benefited the most from. And I would recommend this for our listeners out there. There's a differentiation that everyone should try and make, right? There are mentors who are mentors because they're checking a box. Sometimes some of those are forced mentorships within companies and agencies. Stay away from that, right? You want a mentor who is invested in you and invested in your success. And I believe that gets demonstrated by that mentor's transparency and honesty. I have always asked my mentors to be critical of me. Tell me where I'm going wrong. I have gone as far as saying, I am going into this next meeting with you. I would like to take the lead. I would like you to observe me. And then when we're done, tell me all the things I could have done better. You have to have that type of honesty and ask of your mentors, and they have to be able to reciprocate by providing you and fulfilling that ask. I have been, again, very lucky to have had those opportunities in the private industry. I've had wonderful mentors here at the IRS. But the mentors that I have had, again, what I believe people should look for are the ones that are in your circle of influence. They're able to do something more than just give you guidance and advice, that they can help you grow as a professional and in the career where you are. Outside of the work, I think is equally as important. My wife is also a mentor. As I said, I am introvert by nature. And often what is required of me in my various roles that I've held is engaging more socially, right? And talking to people. And she has behind the scenes, sometimes nudging behind the scenes, sometimes very publicly saying, go talk to people, stop standing around by yourself. And that type of nudging and pushing and helping me to grow and really round out who I am and how I am comes in all forms and shapes and sizes. So don't overlook the possibility that your mentors don't have to be in your professional, network only. Leverage anyone and everyone. Again, it's somebody who has an interest and invested in you and your success. So professionally, lots of wonderful mentors. Personally, my wife is my mentor and she still to this day will push, go talk to that person. I go socialize, go engage. And it has paid off dividends.
you made some very important points, and I'm going to just do a quick summary. One is find mentors who are vested in you. Also, there's a level of transparency, but also have the confidence to take criticism if need be from your mentors, because that takes a lot of confidence. And mentors can also be out, should be in your circle of influence. And also, there could be mentors in your personal life, like your wife is, because we all need that maybe life coach also besides the professionals. Just fantastic points that you made, Kashyap, for our listeners. And thanks very much for that. Kashyap, towards the end, we generally have these lightning rounds of questions. These are very quick questions, so we would love to get some answers from you. What is your definition of Indianness?
Absolutely. Perseverance, resilience, strong family bonds, and food. I would be remiss if I didn't say I absolutely love food. Every time I am back in India, I try to get as much as I can because, again, the diversity of from region to region is incredible. But strong family bonds. Along the whole conversation here, my recollections of the best memories were when I was with my family, the large extended family. And we still, to this day, when I talk about my family in India or here, and sometimes it confuses people because I say I'm an only child, but I also have 8 sisters and 6 brothers. That strong family bond to me. And again, perseverance. I work through any and all obstacles and never give up. To me, that's what Indianness is.
So great things, perseverance, family bonds, and food. I love that. I love that. Shit, give us one living person, whether it could be in India or Indian origin, outside of India, but not in your family, who inspires you. Living, not in your family.
Absolutely. Of course, being in the tech field, there are a lot of tech CEOs. You have your Satya and others. But I've learned a lot about this individual. The one I have really high praise and admiration for is Indra Nooyi, the former CEO of PepsiCo. She was the first immigrant to lead a Fortune 50 company. Her tenure was something along the lines of 12 years, which is unheard of for a CEO. And the turnaround she made for Pepsi to become not just a competitor, but even a leader in the industry is remarkable. She took away this idea and notion of that Pepsi, aka Cola, are all only bad things. She focused on the healthier options and she truly revolutionized what the company was. But beyond all of that, she focused on leadership, what makes strong leaders, the transparency, the honesty, the vulnerability that you need in order to be a strong leader. And Pepsi's been often referred to as a CEO factory because how many come out and they become CEOs elsewhere. That was really Indra who contributed to that approach of leadership. I've been just absolutely fascinated by her career as a whole, and I deeply admire what she's accomplished in her lifetime.
Great choice, Indra Nooyi. Is there a book or a movie that has profoundly influenced you or impacted you, Kashyap?
There are several books. The one that comes to mind that I read frequently is, well, there are a few. So one is Daring Greatly by Brené Brown. Again, there's a whole concept of vulnerability and how people often put on their armors and believe that's how they need to behave. But what makes us all human are emotions. And being open and being vulnerable to putting yourself out there, taking your chances, I think Brené does a remarkable job of laying out the benefits of doing so. I read a lot of Malcolm Gladwell and Adam Grant. And Adam Grant had a book that I just read recently called Think Again. It's about revisiting what you believe were already established notions and ideas and going back and saying, well, is that really true, right? Is there flexibility here? Should I reconsider? So Adam Grant, Brené Brown, Malcolm Gladwell is always a great read. Movies, I love old Hindi movies, just like I love old Indian songs. So growing up was a lot of Amitabh Bachchan movies. I still, to this day, if somebody asks me to play Hindi music, I'm going to play Kishore Kumar, Mukesh, and Lata Mangeshkar, Rafi. It wasn't my generation, but that's the song, or the period that I felt had
the greatest.
Yeah.
They were the greatest. I agree. I know, kind of know the answer to this, but I'm going to just ask you quickly, is who's been the most influential person in your journey?
I would have to split that between my mom and my wife.
Yeah, I kind of knew that. So that's obvious. Nike says their tagline is just do it. So if you, and I kind of know the answer to that, what would be your personal tagline, Kashyap?
Be authentic. As I, again, look back on my career, we talked about all the various stages of my career. I looked at how people who were above me and were who I viewed as successful were successful. And oftentimes I mistook the need to learn from them and instead I emulated their behaviors. And that person is that person and I am me. Learn from them, grow from what we've learned, but continue to remain authentic. If I can go back and tell myself at my 22-year-old self any advice, it was learn, but don't emulate. Learn the behaviors, learn the goods and the bads, and understand how they fit into who you are, but when you show up as your authentic self.
So be authentic. That's a great tagline, and be yourself. We've taken a lot of time, but this has just been fabulous for you to open up and also give such great pointers across your journey. This is, I personally, I'll be honest, I've learned quite a bit. And a great picture into your mom. Is mom still with you, living with you?
No, unfortunately, my mom passed away last September. So
very sorry to hear that.
Thank you. But she's always living with me.
Me, yeah. What a great story, Kashyap. But again, thank you for taking the time and thank you for doing what you do for our country. People need to know the sacrifices that public servants make, and really appreciate you being here.
Thank you so much. I truly enjoyed the conversation and the opportunity to highlight really the journey, but more importantly, to call out the individuals who have had a significant influence in my career and my personal life, and give my gratitude as best as I can through these conversations to them.
And also, you're so very humble. You don't take any credit yourself, but thank you again, Kashyap, for being there. Hopefully, there's a lot more in this journey, and maybe we'll have another conversation in the future. Thank you.
Thank you. I look forward to it.
Thank you for listening to the Indianist Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a 5-star review and subscribe to enjoy future inspirational stories.